Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mark Childress in for Mark Sturgis. Man, I'm excited about this. We've got Andrea Adelson from ESPN on the line with us. Andrea, thanks so much for joining us today. Man, some of the articles you've written recently, I was reading them again last night. You've really had some great stuff. You got to sit down with Lane Kiffin a couple of weeks back, I believe it was now, and spend some time with him. Sounds like you guys had a blast together.
Yeah, appreciate that. Thanks so much. He was the most candid that I've seen him, at least in our conversations when I was there, maybe because it was right after spring practice, and that's the time when you kind of can get coaches to open up a little bit. But it was really interesting just listening to some of his thoughts and philosophies in terms of what it would take for him to move on to another job, whether people had been courting him this past offseason, things that he's learned. Steve Spurrier is a role model of his, which I didn't realize and didn't know, but all the connections and parallels make a lot of sense once he said that. So I'm really interested to see what happens with him this next season, whether or not this one's his last year at FAU, if bigger jobs come calling to him.
Yeah, that will be interesting. And we were talking about the betting lines that came out on week one games this year. FAU is going to Oklahoma. Lane Kiffin's got all summer to prepare that offense to play against what isn't the best defense in college football by any means. It feels like that's some game. If nothing else, that game will be a lot of fun.
Well, and the other part about it is he's got a transfer quarterback from Oklahoma who's competing for the starting job, so maybe he can get a little bit of intel there from his time with Lincoln Riley. But I don't really know how close the talent level is at FAU compared to what Oklahoma has. Now, sure, I think there'll be areas for the offense to maybe try and exploit a little bit against a Big 12-type defense, but certainly not recruiting to FAU at the same level as Oklahoma in terms of four- and five-star athletes. But anytime you've got a coach who is as innovative as Lane Kiffin, who will most likely be calling the plays in that game, he can maybe do a few things to keep Oklahoma on their toes and maybe try and keep it a game for at least the first or second quarter.
Hey, we're talking with Andrea Adelson from ESPN. Andrea, we had some big news down here at Clemson earlier this week. Hunter Johnson deciding that he's going to transfer out. That might clarify the quarterback race a little bit between Trevor Lawrence and Kelly Bryant. Where's your head at on how that thing's going to shake out over the course of the next couple of months?
You know, it's a great question. I think that's what everybody is trying to figure out right now. What is Dabo Swinney going to do? He obviously had a situation a few years ago where he had a veteran coming back but an ultra talented true freshman waiting in the wings, and I really wonder how much the way the Cole Stout Deshaun Watson situation was handled will play into what Clemson does here now this upcoming season. Kelly Bryant, I think, better than Cole Stout. Obviously what he did last year, I don't think he gets enough credit for the job that he did in getting Clemson back into the playoff, a team that people didn't even pick to win the ACC, let alone get into the playoff in the preseason, suddenly goes on a run and they're back. And a lot of that has to do with what Kelly Bryant did when he was healthy. So I do think that Kelly Bryant and Trevor Lawrence are going to play this season. How much each is going to play, I think, is a question the coaching staff probably doesn't have an answer to right now. But I do think that Kelly Bryant has earned the right to play again. And I think Trevor Lawrence, based on the progress he made in the spring, is going to have an opportunity to make some plays too. I mean, the thing is, they bring so many different things to the table, each one of those players, and have an opportunity to do something different. I wonder how that is all going to work itself out. Clemson, a run-heavy team with Kelly Bryant, and I think with Trevor Lawrence, will have the opportunity to open up the passing game much more than it was last season. So it probably all depends on how this team wants to play to its strengths on offense how much we'll see Kelly Bryant and Trevor Lawrence.
Talking with Andrea Adelson from ESPN. Andrea, I look over at the Coastal Division with the college football season looming just a couple of months away, and I'm trying to find a team to get super excited about. Everyone seems to be latching on to Miami. I'm not sure I'm a big believer in them. How do you see the top of the division over on the Coastal side shaking out this year?
I'm right there with you. I don't really have a favorite right now. I was actually talking to some colleagues last week about this, and I could make an argument for every team except Virginia, probably, to win the Coastal Division. I'm not super high on Miami, quite honestly. The way that they ended last season, I think, leaves a lot to be desired, especially because it appears as if Malik Rozier is going to be the starting quarterback. Very similar situation to Clemson in terms of a returning starter that maybe didn't play so great at the end of the year with a freshman waiting in the wings. In this case, it's redshirt freshman Nikosi Perry from Miami. But nobody's really been able to unseat Malik Rozier. He's the most experienced player in the offense, but lacks consistency. And that is what Mark Richt continues to say about him. I had a story about it yesterday. There's a lot of things that they wish Malik Rozier would do better. Problem is that nobody's beating him out in practice. He's a gamer. He shows up when it's on the line. And that's what's happened this spring for Miami. Defensively, I think they should be okay. The question is on offense. The offensive line had some question marks. As I mentioned, question marks with Malik Rozier. They need to develop a rotation at running back, receiver. They need some depth there. So I think Miami will be the favorite, maybe by default, because I don't think there's another team in the Coastal Division right now that you look at and say, oh, yeah, this one is head and shoulders above the rest. I think Virginia Tech might be down a little bit this year. Georgia Tech might be a team that could rise up. Maybe Pitt could rise up. North Carolina, I don't really envision a 10-win season for that team. And as I mentioned, I think Virginia is going to go through some struggles once again. So the state of it is probably going to be some of the usual suspects, but I would not be surprised at all if you had just a bunch of teams that were 8-4, 9-3 in the Coastal Division, because I don't really think there's anybody who's elite on that side of it right now.
Yeah, you mentioned Georgia Tech. I'm starting to warm to the idea that this is Paul Johnson's once every 4 years, puts it all together, and scraps his way to an ugly Coastal championship again. It feels like that. I wouldn't bet against that this year with the mess it is over there.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I was having this conversation with David Hale the other day. We were up at ESPN together for some meetings, and we were trying to go over the Coastal Division field, and we both had the same thoughts on Georgia Tech. You know, they changed defensive coordinators, and I think that's going to help Georgia Tech out. I think they were just too complacent under Ted Roof. This is a team that really didn't get after the quarterback, wasn't aggressive enough. I think that's going to change. They do have some question marks in the secondary, especially. They've lost some really talented players, but I do think on the whole, the defense is going to be better. And then they bring back a really good 1-2 punch at quarterback and back with Benson and Marshall returning. When this team was not turning the ball over last year, they were actually very efficient running football. Their issue was turnovers and fumbles, way too many of them. And so if they can cut back on that, I like what they have coming back at back, at quarterback. I think they'll be better at receiver. I think they'll be better on the offensive line. So that's a team nobody is really looking at or paying attention to. I think that's the way Paul Johnson likes it. That's the way he wants it. And this could be a team that sneaks back into the ACC championship game, no question.
Talking to Andrea Adelson from ESPN.com. Andrea, they had the ACC spring meetings last week. A lot of really smart people get together and, in my opinion, come up with one of the worst possible ideas of expanding the basketball field from 68 teams to 72 teams. I know you got a chance to talk to some of the people involved with that. This is just about money, right?
Well, it's about money. It's about job security for head coaches, right? It looks a lot better when you're a tournament team as, like, you know, number 71, as your number 71 sitting at home, right? And they made it sound as if this was for the good of the game. And we want to avoid all these geographic issues with West Coast teams having to play the first four in Dayton. Let's give them one on the West Coast. It's a lot easier for them. And, I mean, look at all these postseason opportunities for football teams, not nearly as many for basketball teams. Oh, look at the parity. Look at a 16 beating a 1. These are all the reasons why we need to have four more teams in. And yet last year, I think it was difficult trying to, like, okay, how are we going to differentiate the best four out of this like group of 20 at the end of it, which feels like the way it is every single year. Obviously, I talked to some other coaches outside the ACC who are on board with this because, again, job security. And it also is helpful for those teams that are not in a power conference. So I don't know whether this is going to have legs. I don't know what the next step is in terms of when this is going to go before the NCAA, when it can be voted on. But this really was a surprise. Took a lot of people off guard because there wasn't really any talk about needing to expand the field. I mean, there wasn't any clamoring after Selection Sunday that it was an outrage and we need more. This is something that the ACC basketball coaches decided basically in the meeting room in Amelia Island. They took it to John Swofford, and he's like, okay, yeah, we'll propose it. We'll go for it. So we'll see what happens with that.
Wrapping up with Andrea Adelson from ESPN.com. Andrea, before I let you go, what are you working on in the upcoming days and weeks? What can we expect to see from you on ESPN.com?
Well, I'm actually headed up to Gainesville for a little bit of softball. The Florida softball team, one of the best in the country, hosting a super regional. So I'll be doing a little bit of that. I'm working on a piece on Charlie Weiss Jr., who is the son of Charlie Weiss, the former Notre Dame coach. He's now Lane Kiffin's offensive coordinator. So I had a chance to visit with him a little bit while I was in Boca. I've got a couple features on a few Miami players. So definitely a few things keeping me busy here until ACC kickoff rolls around in July.
Yeah, we'll look forward to seeing you up there. That was Andrea Adelson from ESPN.com. Thanks so much, Andrea, for joining us. Love your stuff. Love catching up with you on air as well. Well, plenty to talk about. Breaking news in the world of football today. NFL owners meetings got going today down in Atlanta as well. Tons of football breaking news today. Mark Childerson for Mark Sturgis. And man, Andrea Adelson, I could literally talk to her an entire show. So smart, writes for ESPN.com, covers a lot of the ACC, a lot of the Southeastern sports. Really excited to have her on board and to be able to join us today. So that was a treat for me. So hey, here's your chance at free money. It's the $1,000 free cash stash on ESPN Upstate. The keyword is amuse. Text the keyword to 72881. That's 72881. Good luck. The $1,000 free cash stash on ESPN Upstate now up to 12 times per weekday beginning at 7 a.m. I'm looking down at the three cash stash words for today. Somebody sits around and has to come up with all of these. And they're always unique. Amuse? That's great. I don't know. Maybe it's something interesting only to me, but somebody invested a lot of time in coming up with a just random list of keywords to tweet or to text 12 times a day.
You know what it is? You just flip to a random page in the dictionary and pick a short word.
Yeah, well, I was about to say.
Pick something under six or seven letters.
It's not that easy. Because it goes on for weeks. I mean, I see the big charts that come out with a whole week laid out, 12 hours a day. It's interesting, or maybe just interesting to me. Who knows? Hey, I wanted to hit some of the big news of the day today. David Tepper approved as new owner of the Carolina Panthers. He gave some brief remarks earlier today, and I'm reading between the lines at him, and I'll talk about that again in a second. But this was his first public comments. What's the name of the team? It's the Carolina Panthers, said Tepper. There's a logical place for this team, and right now it's Charlotte. It's the Carolina Panthers. But then he said this. This team has got to have some sort of presence in the Carolinas. Charlotte is the logical place for a stadium right now. As far as a new stadium, you're asking me too much. The only thing I have a market on right now is lack of knowledge and stupidity. I've got all that. I'll learn a lot more in the future. He didn't say as far as a new stadium, it'll be in Charlotte. And I think that opens it up for interpretation. And a guy like me, on the radio, I'll just run right through that door at a million miles an hour and say, let's bring the Carolina Panthers to upstate South Carolina. Why not?
Well, businessmen never love to deal in absolutes. They love having options. They love, especially when you've got a very good NFL franchise. And
this got great leadership coming in, too.
There are four cities, at least, four cities all over the upstate of South Carolina and North Carolina that would love to put in a bid for this. I mean, think about it. with the Hurricanes, Raleigh could start to center itself as the hub of major league sports in the Carolinas.
If they wanted to. And it's not the Charlotte Panthers. It's the Carolina Panthers.
Right.
And he's appealing, as he should, to all of Carolina, north and south. I guess I should say that south and north probably being in South Carolina. But I don't think it's that far-fetched. And it'll be interesting to watch how the money flows, and see what happens there. Another great piece of news today. Houston Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson returned to the field for the first time since his ACL surgery back in November. Here's a quote from Watson. "My knee feels good and comfortable. It was great to be able to go out there and throw and do some things out there and get the timing down with the receivers. Just to actually get back out of here with the group, get back to the basics of football and build that chemistry and build that leadership and that trust within each other. So good to see him out on the field smiling, moving around a little bit. Still a long way to go. He's not 100% healthy yet, but he's back. Last season, Watson threw for 1,699 yards and 19 touchdowns in 7 games.
Unbelievable.
He was tied for the NFL lead in touchdowns when he went out. And it was just 6 starts. Remember, he only played half of that first game. Future is bright for Deshaun Watson, but he's got to stay healthy. Hopefully he will. Also, looks like Big Ben has either listened to his marketing and PR team, or he's had a change of heart. Ben Roethlisberger did not need the playbook to guide Mason Rudolph during Tuesday's offseason workout. Instead, the Steelers quarterback was proactive in helping the rookie, even giving him advice on an overthrown ball. "I think people took some things I said into a context that I was going to be mean or rude or whatever. That's not it at all," Roethlisberger said. "If you listen to the whole conversation, it was said in jest and laughing. I've never been the type to be rude or mean to other quarterbacks. I've had a lot come through here that are younger than me. I've tried to help any way that I can, so I'll continue to do that. He didn't ask me anything, but I inputted my 2 cents," Roethlisberger said. "I hope he was okay with it." That coming after Mason Rudolph put a little bit of extra heat on a very short pass. So I'm glad that these two are, if nothing else, putting on a friendly face for the media that things are working. And Ben was impressed with Mason Rudolph. Said he had a big arm. Seems to understand the offense already. That's a great first step and second step for Mason Rudolph. And it's the right kind of leadership that you want from your quarterback. Man, I was hard on Big Ben the last couple of weeks when the news started to break that he hadn't contacted Mason Rudolph. He pops off in this interview a little bit. He's backpedaling on it now. But it basically seemed to be from Big Ben, "Why do we draft a quarterback in the 3rd round when I could have gotten a player to help me right now? And I don't really need to help this guy if I don't want to." That's not great leadership from a guy who's been doing it for a really long time. So I hit him hard then. I'll give him the credit now. He's backing down, doing the right things, saying the right things. That's good for Big Ben. That's good for Mason Rudolph. And it's really good for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Realistically, one of only 2 teams, I think, that could advance from the AFC to the Super Bowl this year. We'll keep our eye on that. Hey, if you want to get in on the phones, 844-GSP-ESPN. That's 844-477-3776. Want to talk about Deshaun Watson, quarterback situation with the Steelers? What do you think of the new owner of the Carolina Panthers? Give me a shout if you want. 844-477-3776. Well, there's owners' meetings going on in the NFL down in Atlanta today. They do this every year. They've always got a number of topics that they want to go in and attack. Some good and interesting, some quite boring. First on their agenda was voting on David Tepper. Again, that happened today. He passed. Sometime in July, he will sign the paperwork, and he will be the proud new owner of a shiny NFL franchise for just $2.275 billion. Largest ever paid for a professional franchise in the U.S. So that was number one. They've got a couple of other things that are going to be interesting as well. One of them is a kickoff. Remember, a group of 9 special teams coaches put a proposal together. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. that would change blocking and alignment rules on the kickoff. And it basically, it almost makes it look a lot like a punt formation. Just they're kicking it instead of punting it. The goal is to make the play safer. Had a lot of data that they came back from 2017. The concussions occurred on kickoffs 5 times more frequently than other plays. 5 times. So the owners are going to talk about this and what it means for the future of kickoffs in the NFL. Going to implement these changes, I think, going into 2018. And they're already going to discuss the elimination of kickoffs in 2019. If it doesn't happen then, I think by 2020, very soon thereafter, it's gone. And once it happens in the NFL, I think you probably see college football follow suit. A lot of players being injured on these kickoffs. So I hope the realignment works. I'd like the kickoff play to stay in place. Let's hope the realignment works and can reduce the injuries. NFL owners also going to be talking about expanded replay. If you remember back in March, the owners approved a rule. It's 15 yards now if you lower your helmet to initiate contact with an opponent. So a one-off version of the always controversial targeting call in college football that they never seem to get right, ever, even after reviewing it. They want to take a look at it. And they also want to include, if they're going to roll it out, which they are, they've already voted on that, they want to be able to do an automatic replay review just to make sure that ejection is merited. And it's complicated, right? Replay officials will have to judge and confirm whether the contact was flagrant, but they're really focused on safety in the NFL right now. So coming to the NFL this year, essentially targeting. You'll love it just as much on Sundays as you love it on Saturdays now. Again, I get it. I'm not making light of it. Player security should absolutely be at the top of the list at all times. But they've got to find a better way to do it in both college and in the pros. So in the NFL owners meetings, they'll be talking about the kickoff, expanded replay, and the national anthem. When they met back in March, they were very much divided on how to handle the anthem protests that have gone on. According to the current rule, players should stand during the anthem, but they're not required to. Then all the madness between Colin Kaepernick, Eric Reed, filing some collusion grievances, Donald Trump getting involved. It's unclear whether there's going to be a consensus. They may not have a resolution on this, but they need one. This is something that's really hurting the league from a publicity perspective, if nothing else. There have been rumors that each team will be allowed to have their own individual anthem policies, which seems just ripe for even more madness and confusion. So we'll see if the owners can get smart and determine the right path forward. I'm not sure what that is. I'm not sure what the proper way to handle this is. Do you make everyone stand? That seems to be the logical path forward. It's not left as optional anymore. And maybe if they don't want to participate in the anthem, they're allowed to stay in the locker room. Maybe something as simple as that, where you're not doing a protest on the field. It at least hides the issue rather than it being out there today. Don't want to get involved in the politics of it. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Owners today also expected to approve Nashville as the site of the 2019 NFL draft. This is becoming a thing now. It was in New York forever. They just had it, I believe it was in Dallas this year. Chicago, maybe the year before that. I have to go back and look. But the NFL draft, moving the site from location to location, I think is a great thing. Nashville is expected to get it in 2019. And also, they're expected to approve 2 future Super Bowls, Glendale, Arizona in 2023 and New Orleans in 2024. Doesn't that sound like it's a really long time away? It's not. It's 5 years from now and 6 years from now. So they'll be super busy. And oh, yeah, there's one other thing. Yeah, gambling. Of course, the Supreme Court struck down a federal law that prohibits sports gambling. States can now act to legalize betting. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell has called on Congress to enact uniform standards for all states that take that step. Paragraph 15, of course, of the standard NFL player contract prohibits players from betting on the NFL. Other league personnel are prohibited from betting on any professional, college, international, or Olympic competitions. According to the NFL policy, those prohibitions are in place regardless of whether such activities are legal or not. So there is some language there within player contracts and staff contracts that addresses the fact that gambling might be legal. So a lot of difficult questions. They're in Atlanta. They're in a hotel in Buckhead today and tomorrow. Hopefully they come out with that. So we should expect some more breaking news from the NFL probably this evening. Definitely some tomorrow and then going on into the end of the week. And we'll figure out how we want to go from there and how we want to handle it. Well, we're about halfway in today. Haven't even dug deep into college baseball yet. We'll do that coming up. ACC and SEC baseball tournaments already underway. Mark Childerson for Mark Sturgis. Diesel here with me today. Happy birthday, Diesel. He's 34 years old today. Midlife? Midlife crisis. That's not till the 40s, right?
Not there yet.
You're not anywhere close to
that
yet.
Not there yet. But it was funny. I woke up this morning to a bevy, of course, of messages for my birthday. My favorite came from Shorty from B93.7. He says, I bought myself a car for your birthday. He was
how selfless.
How brutal is this? He had a Honda Pilot, whatever the SUV is, two payments away from having this thing paid off, and the engine blew up and it had to be totaled.
Oh,
two payments away from having this thing completely paid off.
But he did it for you, at least on your birthday.
Well, I hope he bought something cool. Knowing him, he didn't. He probably bought a Prius.
Priuses aren't cool.
No.
Saving the
environment. Nothing cool
about
a
no angle on it.
Nothing cool about a Prius.
Okay. Well, happy birthday to you, Diesel. We've been having a good show today. Hey, in the 6 o'clock hour, two really great guests. We've got J.C. Sherbert from thebigspur.com. He's wrote a fantastic article kind of tracing the rise, if you will, of South Carolina football. From Lou Holtz to Steve Spurrier, now on to Will Muschamp. Talking about the culture down at South Carolina. Really good stuff. And we'll catch up on the Gamecock baseball team as well. And then one of my favorite people to have on the show, Dan Favalli, national NBA writer for Bleacher Report. Man, if you want to know what's going to happen in the NBA games, Dan's your guy. Backs it up with great stats. Really enjoy having him. So we'll have J.C. Sherbert at 6:05, Dan Favalli at 6:37. So 6 o'clock hour. Don't be sleeping on us. We got a lot of good stuff going on. So the ACC and SEC baseball tournaments already underway today. Two games in progress right now. Virginia and Florida State tied at 2 in the bottom of the 8th. Somewhat of an upset. Florida State is 9th nationally. They'd like to try to win a couple more games to improve their standing in the postseason. Virginia hanging right with them now in the bottom of the 8th. Over on the Southeastern Conference side, Auburn 3, Kentucky 2 in the top of the 8th. And a couple of games earlier today, Texas A&M upset Vanderbilt 3-1 this afternoon in the SEC. And the ACC, Pittsburgh taking down Georgia Tech 2-1. Also an upset. So some craziness already going on. Of course, Missouri and South Carolina are playing this evening. Man, they've got first pitch on that game at 9:30. That's even a later start than the NBA game tonight. So that'll be a late one. South Carolina has to win that game to advance into the double elimination portion of the tournament. You lose today in the SEC, later, you're gone. So South Carolina, of course, is the number 5 seed. They just took 2 out of 3 from Texas A&M over the weekend. They've won their last 5 SEC series. So after a pretty rough start to the season, a really bad middle part of the season, they've been great since then. Absolutely great. If South Carolina wins tonight, they'll face number 4 seed Arkansas tomorrow. That'll also be the fourth game of the day. So their reward for winning tonight in a game where first pitch will probably be right around 9:30, will be playing again tomorrow with the first pitch, probably right around 9:30 again. The SEC tournament has not been super kind to the Gamecocks. They did win 3 games last year, went 3-2 overall, but it wasn't enough to make it to the NCAA tournament. Last time they won, it was 2004. Man, I'm getting old. Seems like yesterday. They went 4-0 that year, swept through the tournament to earn a national seed. And as we talked about yesterday, we had Derek Scott on, voice of South Carolina baseball. He made a good point. You know, Missouri's playing for their season right now. Missouri right now, if the tournament were to start, the field of 64, Missouri's not going to be in it. So they're desperate. They've got to get some wins. And they'll be throwing their Friday night frontline starter this evening against South Carolina, where South Carolina will be using their midweek starter. South Carolina's in the postseason. They've made it. They're probably going to be a 2 seed in one of the regionals, whether they lose tomorrow to Missouri or win the whole darn thing. It's not going to make a big difference to them. So you've got teams playing in very different ways and different styles. Missouri's laying it all out there to try to keep their season going. South Carolina's kind of playing both sides of the coin. Hey, I'm not going to throw my best starter out there. And how much do you want to use your starters going through the SEC tournament? You don't want to burn them out because the regional the next weekend is do or die. You don't advance out of your regional, your season's done. So we'll keep our eye on that. College baseball conference tournaments, they're here. They're here. So we'll be watching that this evening. Good luck to the Gamecocks. And again, we'll have J.C. Sherbert from thebigspur.com on the show at 6:05 later today. Clemson gets going tomorrow afternoon. They'll be taking on Notre Dame, 3 o'clock. That game will be right here on ESPN Upstate. So no straight up with Sturge tomorrow. It'll be Clemson baseball instead, weather permitting. We have to put that caveat on everything. Man, I believe we went either 6 or 7 series in a row during the year, during the season for Clemson baseball, where there was a weather issue that impacted the Straight Up with Sturge show in some capacity.
Now, in the event of weather, oftentimes they will send back to us.
Yes.
So we may be on and off throughout the afternoon. Just kind of depends on what happens and what the Clemson side wants to do.
Right. And they always give us so much advance notice, too, of what they want to do, right?
It's usually about 3 minutes in advance.
Hey, we're coming back to you right now. Coming back. Yep. So we'll keep our eye on that. And I don't think there's going to be any bad weather tomorrow. Knock on wood. Right now, there's not supposed to be rain in Durham tomorrow. So we'll see what happens there. So we'll go a little bit deeper. Some incredible stats about the Clemson season so far and what lies ahead for them. The ACC baseball tournament is underway. Mark Childress in for Mark Sturgis and here with Diesel today, celebrating his 34th birthday in style, as always. Happy birthday, Diesel. So, update on the scoreboards for the ACC and SEC tournaments. 2 games underway right now. One in the ACC, Florida State, who's in NC State's pool. So this could have an impact on Clemson down the road. Florida State and Virginia currently tied at 2. Florida State, the 2 seed in Pool C. Virginia, the 3 seed. And then in the single elimination portion of the SEC tournament, Auburn 3, Kentucky 2, in the bottom of the 8th. So we'll keep our eyes on both of those. And, of course, South Carolina taking on Missouri tonight. First pitch right around 9:30 on the SEC network. So doing some digging on Clemson today. Their ACC tournament gets underway tomorrow. First pitch is supposed to be 3 o'clock, right here on ESPN Upstate. They'll be taking on Notre Dame. Then Thursday night at 7, Miami and Clemson play one another. And here's how Clemson advances out of their three-team pool. Either win both games and they're out, or if they can beat the winner of Notre Dame and Miami, which the two of them are playing later today, they beat the winner of that game, they advance automatically. Because the best any of the teams in the division at that point would be is 1-1, even if they lost the second game. So if Notre Dame were to beat Miami tonight and then Clemson beat Notre Dame tomorrow, the Clemson-Miami game on Thursday doesn't mean anything. Clemson's already advanced out of the pool. That's why this is such madness. That's why this format is so crazy. You could be looking at multiple games happening tomorrow and Thursday that are completely irrelevant in the tournament. How is that right? I think Clemson's way outthinking the room here. Not Clemson, the ACC, excuse me. Way outthinking the room and getting super complicated. Although I have talked to some people that like this better. Because it's not like the SEC tournament. There's 8 teams playing in the SEC tournament today. 4 of those teams lose, they turn around and go home. 1 and done. Instead of double elimination across the board. The game's, of course, up at Durham Bulls Athletic Park. Against Notre Dame, Clemson 10-6 all time. Never played at a neutral field against Notre Dame. Never played in the ACC tournament against Notre Dame. And for the Miami series, Miami leads the overall series with Clemson 40-29-1. At a neutral field, Miami leads 9-7. And in the ACC tournament, Clemson leads 3-2. And here's the most important thing you'll hear about the games tomorrow, right now. Starting pitchers, TBA. Neither team has decided who they're throwing yet. And it goes back to what I was saying last segment going on with South Carolina. You're kind of playing both sides of the fence here if you're Clemson. Now, Clemson, I think, needs to win a couple of more games because it could help their standing from a national seeding perspective. And it could be the difference in them getting to host a super regional or having to go on the road for a super regional. And that could be important. And we'll talk about that more in the 6 o'clock hour. We've got some bracketology prognostications from Baseball America and D1 Baseball, and Clemson's right on the bubble in both of those. Clemson has won 17 of their last 19 games. They won 12 of 14 weekend series this year. They're averaging 6.3 runs a game, pitching staff, 3.35 ERA. Notre Dame, Clemson's opponent tomorrow, was swept at Louisville last week. But it's the one on Thursday. Getting my days all messed up. It's the one on Thursday against Miami that I've got my eye on. Miami's won 10 games in a row. I don't care who you're playing against. Win 10 in a row in baseball, that's impressive. So Miami is white hot coming into the tournament right now. And if Miami beats Notre Dame later today, Clemson will have to beat Miami on Thursday evening if they want to advance to the semifinal round this weekend. In the last 19 games, Clemson has out-hit their opponent 17 times. They haven't reached the 40-win mark in a regular season since 2006. Clemson has 43 wins this season. It's the 11th time the ACC baseball tournament is being held in Durham. First time since 2016. Guess who won it in 2016? Clemson Tigers. This is the 45th overall ACC tournament. Clemson's been to the finals in 22 of the previous 44 tournaments. Half of the ACC tournaments played, Clemson's been in the finals. That's 9 more than any other school. Clemson's won 10 ACC tournament titles. 10. There are 110-70 in ACC tournament games over the years. Only Florida State has a better winning percentage in the ACC tournament than Clemson. Clemson's 110 ACC tournament wins, 25 more than any other team. Some amazing statistics here. Clemson had 22 ACC regular season wins this year. That's the most since 2006. They won 8 of their 10 ACC series. Clemson had 6 Tigers named to the All-ACC team. Seth Beer and Riley Gilliam earned first-team All-ACC. It was the 3rd time in 3 years Beer was named All-ACC. Not a surprise there. Gilliam became the first Tiger relief pitcher to earn first-team All-ACC honors since 1998. Logan Davidson was a second-team All-ACC selection. Grayson Bird, Kyle Wilkie, and Chris Williams were all third-team ACC picks. And when you look at the prognostications of the field of 64, there's two of them out. D1 baseball right now has Clemson right on that bubble. They've got Clemson as a number 9 national seed. The top 8 get to host super regionals as well, providing they advance. So the tournament started today, according to D1baseball.com. Clemson would host a regional with Auburn as the 2 seed, Sam Houston State and Grand Canyon. South Carolina would be the 2 seed in a regional up in Raleigh, hosted by NC State, and also include Illinois and Campbell. Now, if you go over to Baseball America, Clemson's in a little bit better spot because they have that number eight national seed. When you look at Baseball America has Clemson in a region with Tennessee Tech as the 2 seed, Kentucky and Campbell, and they have South Carolina going up to Chapel Hill, playing North Carolina, including Illinois and North Carolina A&T. So again, what are the takeaways here? South Carolina is in the postseason. They'll be a number 2 seed in any scenario, it appears, after the SEC tournament. They'll be there. Win the SEC tournament, they're probably still a 2 seed in a regional. They're not going to get to host, more than likely. Lose tonight against Missouri, probably still a 2 seed. Go on the road for the regional. But keep your eye on Clemson. If they can advance out of their pool and make it to the semifinals or even the finals or win it, that's probably, in my opinion, going to get Clemson into that number 1 seed for a regional. They're definitely hosting a regional regardless of what happens. But they could get the super regional and a top 8 national seed as well. So, hey, one more hour to go on the show. We've got J.C. Sherbert from the Big Spur. He's going to be joining us in the next segment. Dan Favalli, national NBA writer from Bleacher Report, joining us at 6:37. Lots more to talk about.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.